Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Well, here we are. Locker room golf, the ramble. So what is the ramble? Okay, I'm in my kitchen right now. I am just gonna piece together a little coffee for me. I like the Nespresso coffees myself with a little pod. So the ramble, what's the ramble? Well, I was thinking that there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that you don't really get a chance to fully see. And I figured that actually there's a lot more explanation that goes on, a lot more that needs to be explained behind the scenes, as you know, the trips, as what we get up to on our trips and what's going on within the business, what's going on in kind of like my life of day to day of the game of golf, and how that makes me kind of, I suppose, feel. So I thought today we'd start the podcast with a, like I said, a little ramble. And you know, podcast is something that you guys can sit back and listen to when they're in the car or whatever it kind of is, really, whatever you find your enjoyment. It might be you kind of play it in the background. I've got like 3 coffee machines on the go here. One's my Nespresso, one's the morning coffee of like just the filter, and then I've got my, so I'm just, and I've only got 2 plugs. So I like the strong coffee myself. So I just wanted to sort of have a chat with you about my kind of behind the scenes of what I've been up to and things that are going through my brain leading up to the Christmas period. Getting myself fully prepped for the trip that I've got coming up, which is going out to Portugal to basically do the reviews of product for my videos for Foremost Golf. Now, for those of you that don't know, Foremost Golf is a buying group in the UK. So it's basically Greengrass Golf. So when people say Greengrass Golf, my mind is that it's front of house. It's where it's pro shops, it's golf pro shops. Greengrass is not your online retailers. So Foremost Golf was put together many, many moons ago to help golf pros buy better, support them. You know, if you go to these companies as an individual and you've only got, you know, a few £1,000 to spend to put in your pro shop, you are never going to get the best deals from the companies, are you? Whereas when this was kind of put together, it enables pros to join forces as a buying group and then, you know, get the better deals, because ultimately if the companies want to put their products in their stores, then they have to give them the best deals to be able to get them in there. So that's what Foremost Golf do. They kind of help pros, you know, with negotiation and buying and create terms. So anyway, part of that process with Foremost over time is that, you know, Foremost want to help pros as well when it comes to their time. You know, pros are busy people. You know, when I was a head pro of a golf club, 60, 70, 80 hours a week was kind of where I was at when it came to running the pro shop, managing the staff, dealing with the club, dealing with the members, playing in a few proms, doing a bit of coaching, doing a bit of fitting, doing competitions. Just, there's a lot to it, you know? So don't have a lot of time for things like marketing. And marketing, obviously, an important part of the communicational tool to get out to members. And just putting a little bit of lip balm on because my lips... Filming yesterday, my lips get absolutely smashed this time of year when it's cold and a bit windy. So anyway, the marketing program is a newsletter that goes out every week to the thousand Foremost pros that are up and down the country, the UK. And part of those newsletters and part of the communication is that videos become a big part of that. So to showcase the products through video, I'm your man. That's my kind of role, really. And when it enabled me to be able to finish up what I was doing at Torquay as a head pro. I wasn't giving it enough time there, to be fair. So it gave me enough time to, or gave me an amount of money, should we say, or a project that allowed me to be able to go full time into content creation or making YouTube videos along with my Foremost project. So that was kind of like what allowed me to do that. So every year from that point, so we've now been doing it for 4 years, and I'm very happy to report that we've just moved the contract on for another 2 years. So I will be doing this again for 2026 and 2027. So we go out to Portugal, we go out to better weather. So it enables us, especially at this time of year, where as we speak right now, it is raining. I've just got back from a dog walk and it's raining, muddy, just terrible out there. So we're going to go out to the Vila Moura area. We've been to Vila Moura the last sort of 4 years. We're going to go back, or 3 years. We're going to go back out there in a week's time to take out all the products that are going to be released in 2026, early part 26, late 25. All those products are going to be released. I'm going to take them out there. And the objective is to try and create around 25 plus videos. I'll be disappointed this year if I don't get to 25. First year, I think we only got about 15, let's say 15, 16. And then we got, you know, we got more streamlined, a bit more on top of it before we get out there. And now my objective is to get 25 plus is a goal for me. And so we're putting all our products together. I'm seeing all the new products that are going to be released. Some things have maybe been leaked, so you may have seen a few of them, but gotta say, can't obviously say much because I can't talk about names. I certainly can't talk about names, but I can tell you that the one driver that's jumped out to me visually, haven't hit it yet, taken the head cover off, had a little look, is the new Mizuno driver. That's a shock to a lot of you probably. New Mizuno driver looks fantastic, absolutely fantastic. So got Callaway, got TaylorMade, got Ping's new driver, got Ping's, Callaway's new irons, things like that. There is one club that is in front of me right now, which is the new, a new Ping wedge. And I've used a Ping wedge many, many years ago. I used to have a 58 and a 54 degree wedge in a very old kind of old set. It would have been like an S59 era, maybe before that. Anyway, I can't remember the name of the wedges, but they were really nice at the time. Got on really well with them, and then came out of them, probably in them from maybe a year or two. But the ones that I'm looking at right now, I think they look, I mean, I've contacted the guy, my contact at Ping, who I've just been away with, and I just took a photo and said, I've just opened this for the first time, looking at it for the first time, and it looks just, delightful. So watch this space with the old Ping stuff. Been tinkering around with my own bag at recent time. I'm just looking at another bag that's in my office as we speak with lots of little clubs in there that I kind of, there's a possibility that I'm gonna, well, I fixed my 9-iron. For those of you that knew, I unfortunately hit a root over in Portugal and smashed my 9-iron and broke it, as in bent the shaft at the bottom, which was obviously disappointing, and I thought, oh, I'm never gonna be able to fix this. Anyway, turns out that I had an older 9-iron laying around, so I whipped the shaft out of that, swing weighted it perfectly, well, from what I could see in the garage, perfectly. Saved the ferrule, that was a result, because that could get messy. If you haven't got the right ferrule, then you got to file that all down. I didn't have the kit for that, so. But I built it up together, I had the grip on there, which was basically the same grip, different color as what I've normally used. So anyway, took it to Titleist yesterday, put it on the swing weight machine, got the loft and line machine on it, and absolutely fine. No dramas with the head itself. So loft the same, lie the same, swing weight pretty much bang on. So I'm quite, a little pat on the back for myself with that one. I'm quite chuffed with that. I've just been away. I've had a bit of a run, haven't I? So I've been away to Portugal, did the Pro-Am, which was great. Weather was terrible. Just literally, I'm going to apologize to everyone. I feel like wherever I am right now, it's been raining, and everywhere I've gone, it's followed, the rain's followed me. So if you're anywhere around me and it's raining where you are, I'm sorry. It's probably my my doing at the moment with that one. So hopefully, fingers crossed, really key that we get good weather in Portugal, because I do not want to be going out there and not getting the weather to make it work, you know? But I came back from, Portugal, did my coaching trip out there as well, did the Pro-Am, which was great. For those of you that know, did the Pro-Am and we finished third individually, we tied third with my brother, which was cool. Weather got, as I said, got really windy, so you kind of having to like almost like try and rethink about building your swing again, you know, because you know when you're competing and you're playing in the wind and stuff like that, you know you go into a bit of, well, I do anyway, you go into a bit of a defense mode, and then you're trying to just meander your way around the golf course and put the best score you can together that day, which doesn't look like the prettiest golf, if that makes sense. It doesn't, you know, you hit shots because you're trying to get from A to B, rather than like when you're on the practice ground and you're hitting towering, drawing 7 irons, let's call them. But my 7 iron drops by about 20 feet when I get out on the golf course to get out the wind or just to keep it in play or whatever I'm doing. Definitely hit a bit more of like a bit of a fade off the tee, which is disappointing. I always feel like I'm not swinging it great if I start cutting the driver. Got to reboot that a bit. So lots going into that. Great then trip to Lisbon, which continued to rain. Guys came over, loved it. Love spending time with the you know, the subscribers on the channel and going on these trips and spending evenings and dinners with them. It's just, love it. I love to find out what guys enjoy the most about why they watch, you know. But then we came back from Portugal, literally 35 to 48 hour turnaround time before I then jumped on a flight from Heathrow out to Phoenix, Arizona, which I've never been to Arizona. I've never been to Phoenix, obviously. And I was just, I love Florida. Like, I love Florida. We've, you know, done lots of little holidays over there over the years. And then I lived out there for three and a half years. And I just love the place. I just think it's chilled, like properly chilled. And it's flat, and people always whinge about the flat, but I don't dislike the flat. I like it. Don't bother me, flat. You know? But Phoenix, well, that was like flat in the middle, and then just these mountains that wrap around the city was just phenomenal. It's like the mountains were to the side, and then it just created this flat plain, which is where Phoenix kind of felt like it was built on, and it's huge. You fly in and it's just, we're coming in the nighttime and it's just literally like lights, camera action everywhere, you know? But yeah, so I was really, really, really impressed with it. And, you know, another thing as well with like Arizona is you play golf and there's no wriggle room. Like there's no, you go, it's probably the same in Florida to a point, but there's no rough. Like you go, there is a bit of rough, but there's no real rough. You go from green to then desert. And you know, the one big thing that you got to think about when you get out in the desert, and we thought about this when we went to Vegas as well, was that, you know, there's creepy crawlies out in the desert, you know, there's rattlesnakes, which you've got to really be mindful of, because they, you can't see them, they just blend into the color of the sand, you know. So luckily it was cold and wet enough that they weren't about. Scorpions, I would imagine, there as well. I didn't see any of them, but and I did want to see a rattler, if I'm honest. I did want to see one, just to, but it was just too cold for them. I'd like to go back there when it's a bit warmer, nicer weather. But then you go back there when it's too hot and it's just, yeah, ridiculous. So, but wow, I mean, the Yanks, they do it right, you know. In my mind, like, probably be slated a little bit for this, but I like, when I go and play a golf course, I want to be, I kind of want the pampering. Not the pampering, that's a bit wrong. That's not right, is it? But like more like, I want it classy. I want classy. I come to golf courses in the UK, and some of them are classy, don't get me wrong. I come to courses in the UK and everything's just done. Yeah, that'll do. I hate that'll do mentality. I just hate it. Whereas, you know, I've been to two golf courses out there, and yes, you pay the green fees. To be fair, green fees wise, I think one was like $190 or $180 or something like that to play it. if you're an amateur golfer, maybe a bit less for pros. But so $190, and what? But you are, you know, you're greeted at, when you get there. The place looks immaculate. It's, you know, that includes a buggy. You know, 190. You know, you're paying 200 quid around in the UK now. Some places a lot more, and it's just not as well put together. And then you get in the clubhouse, and the, you know, the pro shop's like well managed, as in there's loads of staff in there to help you. And you know, you go into a pro shop over here, and there's one pro because they can't afford to employ any other people. You know, it's just so cutthroat over here. And then you get into the, you know, you get into the bar, and there's five TVs with different sport on them. And you know, I love, why not? It's a sports club. Golf is a sports club. Golf is sport. It's not old military, keep quiet library. It's not a library. I didn't sign up to golf to be going to a library. If I want to go to the library, I'll go to the library. But anyway, I think I'd love golf clubs in the UK to just go over there and not, and what, look at it and then go, no, actually, that won't do. We want to get people in here for lunch and keep them here. And what's going to keep them here? A bit of sport on TV is going to keep them there, guarantee you. And you could argue, oh, well, maybe you'll only just get the male in there, and you're not going to get the mixed couples in there and this, that and the other. And, you know, I saw lots of mixed people in the States watching sport because they all get into it. You know, they love their teams and they love their college sport. NFL, NHL, whatever's golf, whatever's on, they're all into sport. And I think we should do better. Definitely we should do better in that. And I think that it would retain, and you got to think, like, you know, with all due respect, yes, we're all trying to push to get more women into the game of golf and more kids into the game of golf. But the reality is that 90% of the people that play golf are male. It's got to be. When I was managing Torquay, it was 90% male membership, 10% female membership. Yeah, that dropped from maybe 11 or 12% down at one stage. It was up there, but it was, you know, it was always around that. And that's what we have to accept. We know what our clientele is. Yes, we can keep pushing the needle when it comes to women's golf and stuff like that, but let's focus on the clientele that we've got and let's make more sports venues, sports bars, less rules, more sports bars. You know, someone commented on my YouTube video of me wearing a hat when I walked into the clubhouse at where was I? Greyhawk. They don't care. Like, hats are a thing. Like, I enjoy wearing a hat. It's not offensive to anybody. Yes, I would never wear a hat in certain situations, but I know where I can and can't wear a hat. And walking into that clubhouse in the States, you can wear a hat. But someone jumped on me on that and said, oh, it's, you know, a bit disrespectful. And maybe, maybe not. It's a matter of opinion, isn't it? But anyway, great trip away. Ping, amazing. I talked about that in my video that I've done of thing. I wanted to talk more about it. I couldn't show off too much because ultimately, we were trying to create, I had a plan. We had a plan as to what we were going to try and create when it came to the videos, foremost videos, you got to remember. And I've got to make this clear as well, that like when I go and film for foremost, as much as I'm going to try and create a Sunday morning show, I can't, like that's them, you know, that's them not employing me, but paying for me to go and create content for them. So when I'm using my cameras and all that, they're very good, and they'll let me use certain clips for you know, for my own Sunday morning shows and things like that. But you gotta remember, that's their footage. I'm making videos for them, so I can't, let's say, look at creating Ping videos for my channel and me. So when people sort of say, oh, looking forward to seeing the videos, they're gonna be foremost videos, you know? Anyway, it was the objectives were to create sort of four or five videos of the whole process of us going to the factory and looking around it and looking in Carsten's office and going in the vault, which is the gold vault, which is all about all the putters that have won tour events or majors go into a vault
from the player, should we say. So they'll make a gold-plated version. Player gets one, Ping Vault gets one. There's 3,200 putters in there now of worldwide wins, which is amazing, absolutely amazing. I was in the vault with John K. Solheim, who is John A. Solheim's son, who John K. is now the CEO of Ping. Carsten Solheim was the founder. He's the grandfather of John K., who's, you know, his dad was John A., and then his grandfather was Carsten. So Carsten came over, was an engineer, came over from Norway, moved to Arizona or that area, I assume, and then created Ping, wanted to start with a putter, and, you know, then moved into custom fitting, and we are where we are now from custom fitting because of Carsten, which is an amazing story. And to go into his office and see all the tinkering bits that he's got in there, which feels like probably, well, I mean, they've kept it as his office, and, you know, hasn't really been touched since he left, or unfortunately passed away back in 2000. But you know, you go in there and you see all the prototype putters and heads that have been thrown on his desk in a bowl and stuff like that. It's cool. It's really, really cool. I think he was into aeroplanes a little bit. I don't know if he flew planes, but you could see, I could see plane things on his desk, plane magazines, things like that. So that was cool. And then clinical. I would say clinical is probably the word that I would use when it comes to looking, going through the product section, so building of equipment and things like that. I thought that was just so clinical. You go into some of these factories and they all try their hardest, you know, but there's glue everywhere and there's, you know, just crap everywhere, you know, and it's because of the process. It's a process, you know. There's loads of people sort of going through that and creating different stations and creating different aspects of the clubs, and it just makes a bit of a mess, and then they have a big tidy up and Ping on it. And probably what you would expect really from a family run type business. They like to keep it clean and tidy. And then we moved over to the Proving Grounds, I think they're called Proving Grounds. Yeah, Proving Grounds. And then that was really cool as well, because you got to see a robot hitting balls, got to see them making their own shafts, and the research and development that goes into that, which is phenomenal. How they, yeah, I mean, that's a whole story, that is shafts, how they build them, and, you know, how they create the stiffness from the wrapping of the graphite. So it's a sheet of graphite that just gets wrapped and wrapped and wrapped and wrapped, so sheets on top of sheets. So and then they create different bondings to create different stiffnesses and weights, and the amount of wrapping that you do creates the weight, and it's just fantastic to see it all unfold. Probably a world I didn't even know. So, you know, and you gotta think, you know, why did I even start this whole YouTube thing? Was all because I wanted to look behind the curtain. You gotta think, right? I go to Ping and I get to see these guys and I get to spend the time and chatting with these guys. You know, like that doesn't really happen for a club pro. So me as a club pro, who you think, oh, Dan's in the golf industry, you know, he must get access to it. No, you know, Harry, head pro Harry at Churston, you know, he may get, if he sold a load of Ping stuff, he might get the opportunity to go there, and if he was number one in the UK or Southwest or something like that, there might be an opportunity for him to go and see that. But for the majority of pros, they're never going to see that. So if they're never going to see it, then the general public, the general golfer, well, they've got no chance in seeing it unless they pay for a tour, maybe. I don't know how that works. Or you win a competition and you get to go and see it yourself. So that was the whole idea, is that I get to see these things behind the curtains. And I knew that this industry would allow me to be able to open those doors and have these opportunities. And I thought, do you know what? I want to showcase it more. And that's why it kind of started. It's why I pushed on it, really. And that's what my theory's been on all the way through, even to this point right now. We had a great trip to Ping and got to see some amazing things, as I said. Whilst all that's been kind of happening, I suppose, or whilst all these events have been going on, you know, the PGA of UK, so you have the PGA of America, PGA of UK, the PGA, they call them so I'm a member of the PGA. There's been a change at HQ with the PGA. In fact, there's been some real changes going on within the PGA. not PGA Tour or DP World Tour, they're separate. This is PGA Pros. Tournament golf, you know, it's, you know, you got to remember the PGA was developed to be, to create opportunities for pros to be able to compete, you know. It's like the Ryder Cup. You know, the Ryder Cup was designed by Samuel Ryder because he wanted to give British pros, Great Britain and Ireland pros, more of an opportunity, more of an opportunity to expose the qualities of their golf to the general public a little bit more, which is why he put a match on against the States or the American guys, because the Americans were getting all these opportunities and the British pros were, you know, struggling. You know, Walter Hagen, I don't think Walter Hagen was stood in a pro shop giving golf lessons and stuff like that. Walter Hagen was on tour doing exhibition matches and things like that, and there was money to be played for and there were sponsors that were involved in that. And in the UK, you know, old Ted Ray, who was, you know, Harry Vardon, you know, they were given golf lessons because they had to pay the way, or they were head pros of golf clubs because they had to pay the way. And so the PGA really came about because it was to create playing opportunities for golfers, you know. And then on the back of that, it was then about supporting the pro for, you know, training, you know, the training process that these assistants or I went through and all the pros go through, is that the idea was to train you to be able to manage a pro shop, to be able to manage dealing with the golf clubs, to be able to, you know, that side of it. And pros also in the back in the day, they were the greenkeepers. They would actually go out and look after the golf course, you know. And one funny thing, like not funny, but like it's the reality of, you know, I talk about, you know, the experience of being in America and that relaxed atmosphere in a golf club facility compared to the stuffiness of what you get in the UK on occasions. And don't get me wrong, it's getting better. But, you know, if you think, right, and this will be, some of you will know this, some of you won't, but think about your golf club. And if you're generally an older club, you'll find that the pro shop is a detached building to the clubhouse. Okay? Detached, as in it's separate from the main building, okay? And the reason for that was because back in the day, and I only have to, I could probably run us back 30 to 40 years ago, maybe even some of you pros out there hopefully listening, you might tell me that when you first turned pro, you weren't allowed in the clubhouse. So as a pro, there was a big difference. There was a class difference of people. There was the white collar compared to the blue collar. The white collar being the more lawyers and professional people, let's call them. Okay. Whereas the pro, well, he was an artisan. He was a working class blue collar individual, and golf clubs was a clubhouse of gentlemen, and a pro golf professional was not a gentleman. So they were never allowed to just go into the clubhouses, you know. So you think about all those pro shops that are around the country. I'm thinking of some now, like Churston. All right, Churston's a brand new clubhouse. And the pro shop is kind of in the clubhouse. It's in it, but it's not. There's no doorway in from the pro shop into the clubhouse. You have to go out of the clubhouse and the pro shop and around. But that's attached. But that's a brand new clubhouse. That was a clubhouse that went up in 2005. You go to the clubhouse before, the pro shop was detached to the clubhouse. Tynmouth Golf Club around the corner from here, detached from the clubhouse. Torquay Golf Club, where I was at before, detached from the clubhouse. Southport and Ainsdale Golf Club, detached from the clubhouse. The old pro shop at Royal Liverpool Golf Club was detached from the pro shop, from the clubhouse. It's now they've brought it in-house. But Saunton, detached from the clubhouse. Like that's the reality of what it was, and that's the reason why it was. Whereas now we're allowed in. We're allowed in the clubhouses, and everything's relaxed, and everyone's happy. But anyway, back to the PGA, and this is the thing, isn't it? Rambling. I am literally rambling, but hopefully you're getting some information through, which is cool. PGA have lost their CEO, so the CEO of the PGA has recently resigned.
Rob Maxfield is the guy. He's been in position for a number of years. He was, I believe, did a good job. Did I meet him once? Don't know. I was at the PGA Cup with Paul in 2015. He was there. You know, a question that I had. So my question to the PGA has always been, like, there's been a big shift in tournaments. So they've, like there's less tournaments now to play in, certainly from a regional point of view, than when I first turned pro. Back in the day when I was 16 and I played in my first pro-am as an amateur with my dad and my brother, we played with another pro called Lee Thompson, his name was, good player. Played in the region, Southwest region. He was saying that there was around, I think, between 80 and 90 pro-ams in the year, and these guys would, in the summertime, you know, be playing three or four times a week, and they would come down to, let's say, this area and play three or four here and then stay and play and then move on to the next, you know, go home for the weekend, then next event. So there was lots to play in. And back in when I was 16, what year would that have been? So 16 would have put it to 90, let's say 1997, the first pro prize for the Churston Pro-Am was £1,000 first prize. Okay? First prize in a modern pro-am might be £700 or £800. So the prices have dropped. Therefore, then playing, I think there was 29 or 30 pro-ams in 2024, 2023 in the region. So it was a huge, huge drop. And now those regions are being kicked out of touch again, I think, and I think everything's moving into more of a national thing, and there's going to be national events rather than regional events, which, you know, the PGA at the time, there was a bit of a squash away. There was competition between the Devon PGA. When I first kicked off, they were really strong. The guys before my next lot of pros, wave of pros, the guys before did a really, really good job of making good events. And we had lots of pro-ams, or, you know, let's say 10 pro-ams. And those pro-ams would raise money to then put back into the PGA events for the winter. And then we'd have more money to play for in the winter. So there was everything was kind of self-sufficient. Didn't really need a great deal of sponsorship. And it was squashed by the PGA to a degree, because we were in then they said that we were kind of in competition, I suppose, with the regional stuff and whatnot. And anyway, it was a bit of a sad time, really, because we lost a lot of our events. And but it turns out now that they're more than happy for us to kind of pick up that again and go with it, because there's now no regional kind of things going on. And I don't know the full ins and outs of it. I'm sure I'll get to the bottom of it. And this is what I said to them, is that, you know, my representative of this area, I said to him, you know, if I don't know what's going on, how does everybody else know? If I don't know what the situation is, and as a members organisation, I feel like we should have an understanding or know what's going on. So I've written a bit of an email in to find out a bit more about it. I want to know what the PGA does, other than for the playing point of view. You know, we pay a membership to be a member of the PGA. What is that, other than, you know, what does it do for a lot of pros? If you're a pro that just coaches, doesn't really play a lot, you know, you've already got your PGA qualification, do you need to be a member of the PGA? You know, I like it because I'm proud of the organization. I love it. Like, I love being a PGA pro. I think, you know, I love the history of it. Of, you know, I think it was Taylor, J.H. Taylor, Varden, Braid, all very much involved in bringing that all together back in the old days. But, yeah, but I want to know what the vision is. I want to know what the vision is with the PGA. Let's take the blazers off and let's get a little bit more with the 21st century, shall we? You know, let's get real with, and actually all the unions, if they could all work together, that would be a bit nicer, and we'd all be all singing from the same hymn sheet. But so I'm interested to see what happens with the new CEO coming in, and what the objectives are, and who's going to be appointing them, and then what the mission plan is for the PGA. You know, it could be good. It could be really good. And I don't see many pros that are really happy with the PGA at this stage, and I'd be interested to see where that ends up. So yeah, that's the PGA side of things. And Just wanted to kind of maybe just discuss as well kind of my thoughts going into 2026, where I'm at from a business standpoint, as in, you know, I've got started out this, obviously this locker room golf, which was locker room golf is purely a place where I wanted to bring everybody together, a hub, a community. I have 52,000, as we speak right now, let me look it up. 52,746 subscribers, which is great. And thank you all for subscribing. It's huge for me. But anyway, 52. But I don't know you guys. Like, I know you guys if I've met you, but I don't know. I don't have email addresses. I can't communicate. And I always wanted to put a newsletter together, but I've not been able to communicate through YouTube and through email. So I feel like the locker room golf is a great place to be able to communicate better with you guys, and that's why it started. But so I've got that kind of bubbling on in the background. Obviously, foremost for the next 2 years is a really important. It's always been a really important part of what I do for the last sort of 4 years, and continues to be kind of the main part of what I bring to the game, myself, my own game. Certainly will be for the next 2 years. There's the dog, if you hear the dog, Monty. Yeah, we've just been for a stroll. He's been a bit wet, so kicked him out, but he's back and he's dried out. So that's going to be obviously my main objectives for 2026. Joe's been very busy doing his stuff, editing with what I'm doing. Joe Killeran, he's been doing a bit of work with me since April. Jordan has... I was hoping Jordan would carry on with the foremost stuff, because that's the kind of key areas that he was editing in the end. But he's decided that he wants to now really pursue and persist with what he's doing in the finance kind of world. I would love to explain more about that, but I probably shouldn't. But I also just don't know exactly what he does from a finance point of view, so I can't really comment on that. But I'm proud of him, and I want him to be going on and succeeding in what he wants to do and enjoy his next step of his career. So with the channel, it brings me onto the channel, because I've spoken to my brother a bit more, because I feel like, you know, I feel like there's an opportunity for him within the channel a little bit more. I think the audience really, really like him. He's got a great journey. I know that his objectives are senior tour in 4 years and 3 or 4 years. So, you know, I'd love to document that journey a little bit more and get a little bit more behind with Paul, because I think that would be cool. And obviously our biggest views for this year have always been around the sort of brother v brother matches. And then could we do more with that? You know, could we play matches where brothers, we take on other people? Could we have different types of brother v brother matches? Destinations are really important for that as well. Like, they've got to be on decent golf courses, because they get the better views, you know? But ultimately what it comes down to with the YouTube is finances. You know, it's really expensive traveling around playing matches or videoing it, because majority of the time, you know, and this is where sponsors are so important, majority of the time is like, you are not breaking even. If I go off and play a match versus my brother and we drive off somewhere, let's say we go up to Bristol, you know, by the time you've traveled, by the time you've filmed, by the time you've edited that video, you will lose money. There is no profit in that. So you have to then, the way you look at it, and you would probably turn around and go, well, why would you do it? Well, because ultimately the sponsor side of it, if you divide all the sponsorship money that comes in and break it in, then you can start seeing that there's, you know, there's a break-even point there, or there's a, you know, one makes a few quid and the other one kind of loses a little bit, but then it kind of breaks even. And, you know, and that's where YouTube is at. If, you know, that's why things got trickier with how much time Jordan was putting into it, and then how much time I was putting into it. So that's where the media business has kind of come from, really. And the you know, me pursuing that media side, because ultimately YouTube is great and I love it, and it's, you know, but It's at 52,000 subscribers and an average of 10,000 views on a video. It's great. We've got a core audience of fantastic people that love to tune in and follow the journey, but ultimately, it doesn't pay a wage, really. It doesn't. It might pay a wage, might pay someone. But it doesn't. It doesn't even pay minimum wage for a full-time job. There you go. From ad revenue, from the channel. So it's something that you've got to pursue then in other avenues. How do we take that editing software, and how do we then make videos or use those assets to create content for other people that would then possibly pay for that or whatever? And that's the pursuit. That's the pursuit for me. And that gives then Paul, I feel like, an opportunity to, if he wants to push on with the YouTube space, and maybe there's another avenue there where he might be able to help grow it a little bit more and have a fresh look to it and, you know, things like that. So yeah, that's kind of the key kind of areas that we've been focusing on, you know? So get out. Come on, out. Out, 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 out. The dog is always on the hunt for the cat food. Not where you need to be. So that's where we're at from a business point of view, and that's where we're at from my strategy, so we call it moving forward, and you know, what the opportunities are with the YouTube channel, what the opportunities are with Locker Room Golf. And so there we go. Like I said, this week I'm sort of getting myself ready for the Portugal trip. Everything's getting planned. I'm having meetings with the companies, listening to all the marketing spiel that goes on with all the products, and looking at what's great about all the new products and how it differs from previous generation products, which is always important. I think, you know, let's release products that I feel are better. I think that is just so important. Like, you can't be releasing stuff that isn't better than what you've previously made, which is, I've seen over the years, you know, just feel like you're releasing stuff for the sake of releasing stuff. If it's not better, don't push it. Just come up with another marketing strategy. But yeah, the stuff looks good this year, and I'm excited to bring it forward. But anyway, on that note, I will finish up on the ramble of the Locker Room Golf podcast. Hope you've enjoyed it, and I'll see you again soon.